All right. Well, hey, everybody. Welcome to Ada Bible Church. I am so glad that you are here and that you're joining us this weekend. If we haven't met, my name is Brad, and I am the pastor for a brand new campus, our Bella Vista campus, which I am so excited about. We launch next weekend. Yes, that's awesome, isn't it? So excited. For the last year and a half, we have been meeting at a school week after week after week. We've been setting up chairs and tearing down chairs and setting up chairs and tearing down chairs. And I'm here this weekend because I just couldn't do it. I couldn't do it one more time. No, just kidding. But thank you. Those of you up at our North Satellite, I'm just so thankful for your commitment and your dedication and just helping us pull off church in a school every single weekend. I'm so excited for the journey that we have ahead of us starting next weekend. Well, hey, and if it's your first time here at Ada Bible Church, I hope this space feels like home to you very quickly. When I was a kid, my dad was telling me a story about when he was in high school. And he said when he was in high school, they had a house that had a lot of land, kind of like a farm. And he said in the hot summers, he just really wanted a swimming pool. He really wanted a pool, and so he asked his dad, can I please have a pool? Can we please get a pool? And his dad said, no, we're not getting a pool. And then one day, he caved. He relented, but there was a catch. He told my dad, here you go, and he handed him a shovel. And my dad, being a high school student, he was super dedicated and committed. And so he took that shovel and he went outside and he started digging a hole. Day after day after day, he was out there digging. All of his free time was consumed with digging this hole. And by the end of the summer, the days started to get cooler. The days started to get shorter. And he looked at all that he had done. He had a big hole in the ground. He'd moved a lot of dirt. But it looked nothing like a swimming pool. And he just said, he stood there on the side of this hole with shovel, and he just took the shovel and dropped it in the hole, and he walked away. And he realized all of that energy and all of that effort that he put into that, it just wasn't working. And today, as we start our conversation together, I just wonder if you ever find yourself maybe at the side of a pool and you're hanging onto a shovel and you've just been putting energy and effort into something and you've been digging shovelful after shovelful after shovelful thinking that it's the next shovelful that will get you to the place that you want to be. Or maybe it's just one more full day of work that will get the thing that you want so badly, but if you're really honest and you really stop to think about it deep down inside, you know that what you're doing just isn't working. Well, today, as we open up the scriptures together, we're going to start with a story about a guy who's been sitting by the side of a pool, and he's been there for a really long time, and what he's doing, it just isn't working. The story comes from John chapter 5, and it begins like this. It says, sometime later, Jesus went up to Jerusalem for one of the Jewish festivals. Now there is in Jerusalem, near Sheep Gate, a pool, which in Aramaic is called Bethesda, and which is surrounded by five covered colonnades. Here, a great number of disabled people used to lie, the blind, the lame, the paralyzed. And one who was there, he'd been an invalid for 38 years. 38 years. We get a couple details about the story. It says that we're in Jerusalem, and it says that there's this pool, and by this pool, it's called Bethesda. And it says this detail, it says there's like five covered colonnades. A colonnade was a porch that goes around the edge of a pool. And for a long time, scholars were just really confused about this, because how do you take a square pool, and how do you have five edges on this pool? So how, like five colonnades around this pool. It didn't make any sense. And so scholars just try to figure this out and thought, well, maybe John just got his facts mixed up, or maybe, I don't know, I mean, maybe his story isn't real. Maybe he made this up. And it wasn't until 1956 that archaeologists were able to uncover a pool in Israel. There's no other pool like this. Out of all of Israel until 1956, they'd never found a pool that had five colonnades. But as they were digging, they were near the Sheep Gate in Jerusalem, and they found a pool there. And it had four colonnades, just like every other pool that they have found. And they continued to dig, and they realized that there, at some point, had been an addition made to this pool. And when they made the addition, they just kept the original wall. So now it has four colonnades all around the edge of the pool and one that goes right down the middle. In fact, here's a model of what this looks like here. Five colonnades all around this pool. And I just love this. I love this because it reminds us that what we read in our Bible, these are real stories that happened in real places with real people who experienced real struggles and real transformations because we worship a God who's real. And at this pool in Bethesda, there was this myth that an angel would come down and would begin to stir the waters in the pool. And if the angel stirred the waters of the pool and you were there and you were watching and you saw the water begin to move and you were the first one to enter into the pool, you could experience a healing. And so just a large number of people who all desperately longed for some kind of healing would gather every single day around this pool because they believed that this myth was true. Archaeologists, when they were uncovering this pool, they found that there was a cave underneath the pool that would impact the water pressure and maybe sometimes let gas bubble up through this cave and into this pool. And so every once in a while, when the wind wasn't moving, no one was in the pool, the pool would start to swirl and would start to move as the water pressure changed or the gas would change. And so people latched onto this idea that this was a place where you could go to experience a healing from God. And it says there's a guy there. And he's been there for a long time. You remember how many years he's been there? 38. 38 years. Every day, laying by the side of this pool. 38 years. I mean, I don't know what happened to this guy. Maybe when he was a kid, he had like some kind of accident. But if he was 12 years old when he had this accident, he'd be 50 now, laying by the side of this pool. If he was 25, he'd be 63 years old, laying by the side of this pool. He has been there, and he's been there for a really long time. I just wonder if today, as we begin to unpack this story together, I wonder if you find yourself maybe at your own pool, and you just feel like you have been there waiting for God to answer your prayers, and it just feels like it's been a really long time. And you're starting to think that, I don't know, maybe God is just ignoring me. But maybe, like, deep down inside, at your worst, you're thinking, maybe God doesn't even care. Or maybe God isn't even there. And today, as we work through this story, I just hope you hear and see and know and believe that God does care. And that he does see you. And he knows what you're feeling. He knows what you're experiencing. And he longs to meet you right where you are. A story, Jesus finds this guy at this pool, and he has a conversation with him, and through this conversation, Jesus does three different things, so we're going to have a three-part conversation today. So let's jump back into the story. Here's how it continues. It says, here, a great number of disabled people used to lie, the blind, the lame, the paralyzed. One who was there, he's been an invalid for 38 years, and when Jesus saw him lying there, he learned that he had been in this condition for a long time. So a whole bunch of people, so a large group of people, a multitude of people, says that Jesus comes into this pool area, and it's, I mean, so many people, it's almost like he's like stepping over people. Oh, excuse me, I'm trying to get around here. Pardon me, oh, sorry, I'm just working my way over there. But pause there for just a second. Because John, at the very beginning of his gospel, he tells us who Jesus is. In the chapter one, just the first few verses, John tells us exactly who Jesus is. He says, Jesus is God. He said, at the beginning of creation, Jesus was there and everything was created through him. So this guy who's walking through the crowd, it's not just a guy. This is God in the flesh with skin and bones and hurts and struggles. He knows what it's like to be God, and he knows exactly what it's like to be us. He knows what it's like to be lonely. He knows the emotions that we feel. Hey, he knows what it's like to be filled with joy. He knows what it's like to laugh at a good joke, and he knows what it's like to blow on the dust of the ground and create life for the very first time. This is God in the flesh. He has power and he has authority, and he is making his way through the crowd. Oh, excuse me, working my way over there. And as he weaves through the people, we see the first thing that Jesus does. Here's what it says. It says, Jesus saw him. Jesus saw him. Here at Ada, on all of our campuses, on any given weekend, we have thousands of people who gather together. In fact, in the space where you are right now, if you were to look around you, you probably see hundreds of other people. But we believe that Jesus sees you. Jesus sees you. The knee pain, it just won't go away. I mean, was not just one surgery, but two surgeries. And it's ice, and it's heat, and it's medication, and physical therapy. And the simple act of walking over the threshold of your house feels like climbing Mount Everest. It's just been so long since you've felt normal. He sees you. He sees you. It's been 3 years. Your little girl should be 3 right now. And the grief that you feel from that loss, I mean, it's softened a little bit around the edges, but there are moments where it feels sharp and pointed and jagged and suffocating, and it's been 3 years. He sees you. He sees you. It was the brakes that needed to be fixed, and then the water heater went out, and then you had that unexpected hospital visit, and it just feels like you're never going to get your head above water financially, and you wonder if there'll ever be a day where you won't be worrying about money. He sees you. He sees you. You walk out to the mailbox and you open it up, and right on top is a card, and you recognize from the return address that it's a couple, and it's a wedding invitation, and you're excited for this couple. You are filled with joy, and as you take it inside and you put it on your refrigerator, there is still something inside of you that knows that this is just another 4x6 cardstock reminder that although you want to be in a relationship, it just hasn't worked out for you yet. He sees you. He sees you. You might feel invisible to God, but you are not invisible to him. You are not invisible to Jesus. You are invaluable to him. He sees you, cares about you, longs to meet you where you are. But I feel like there's a little bit of tension here in the story as well. Because we're talking about Jesus seeing us, but I think there is some tension, because how many people were at the pool? A large number of people were there, a multitude of people. And we don't have any evidence that Jesus does anything else but have one conversation with this one guy. We'll see as we unpack this story, Jesus does something amazing. I mean, a miracle happens. But Jesus doesn't do anything else for anyone else there at the pool. And I just think this tension is that sometimes breakthrough happens for someone else, and sometimes it doesn't happen for us. And I think there's a question there. Imagine as Jesus is walking through the pool area, he steps over you, He works his way over. You see, you watch him as he goes across the pool area. There's a guy over there. You know that guy. He's there every single day. You've never seen that guy walk. And Jesus bends down. He has a conversation with this guy. And then amazingly, that guy stands up. He rolls up his mat. He throws it over his shoulder and he walks out of the pool. Meanwhile, you are still laying there waiting for God to desperately answer your prayers. Desperately enter into your story. And I think the question is this: why him? And why not me? Why did they experience a breakthrough and I still feel stuck? Why did God answer their prayers and not mine? And I don't know the answers to those questions. But what I do know is that just because God is healing over there doesn't mean that he is not moving in here. And just because God is doing something different over there doesn't mean that he doesn't care about what's happening in here. God moves uniquely in all of our lives. And our role, our job is to cling on to the hope and to cling on to the reality that God is still moving right now, right where we are, even if we can't see it or feel it or experience it. The story continues. It says this: when Jesus saw him and he was lying there and he learned that he had been in this condition for a long time, he asked him, "Do you want to get well?" "Sir," the invalid replied, "I have no one to help me get into the pool when the water is stirred. While I'm trying to get in, someone else goes down ahead of me." So Jesus comes up to this guy. He's sitting by the pool. He's lying by the pool. And he asks him a question. "You want to get well?" Why does he ask him that? Wait, do you want to get well? Of course he wants to get well. He's sitting at the pool. Why would he not want to get well? This is the pool where everyone goes to if you want to experience healing. What do you mean, do I want to get well? Of course, like the answer would be 1,000% yes, absolutely I want to get well. But that's not what he says, is it? He says, "I can't get in the pool." It's like the guy is more concerned about the logistics of the healing rather than the desire to be healed. It's like the guy is saying, "Well, tell me, how is that going to work? What is step A and step B and step B, C? What is that going to all look like? How is that going to go together?" And I just wonder if sometimes we hesitate to ask God because we're just concerned about whether or not this could even work. We're concerned with the steps and the parts, and we're just not sure how we could see this whole picture come together. And I think sometimes we hesitate. I think other times we hesitate, maybe because if we're honest, deep down inside, we don't really want to be healed. I mean, because sometimes the first steps towards healing are hard, and they're painful, challenging, they're difficult. I mean, healing might mean counseling. Healing, it might mean telling the truth. Healing might mean extending forgiveness. Healing might mean that you never take a drink again. Healing might mean that you delete your Instagram. Sometimes I think healing and the first steps towards healing can be hard and can be difficult, sometimes maybe even painful. And sometimes I think when we begin to look at that and think through that, we just realize, you know what, maybe I'm more comfortable right where I am right now. So Jesus asks this guy, "You want to be healed?" The guy, he doesn't answer the question. But as Jesus continues to talk with him, as he is there, we see the compassion of our God who loves us deeply. We see the hope of Jesus, the grace of Jesus. And as we're beginning to work through this story, I just wonder... You look around the room, hundreds of other people with you, but it might seem like you are the only one here. There's no one else in the building. And the words of this story are just speaking right into your heart. It's because Jesus sees you. He knows you. He loves you deeply. And I believe that he longs to do something amazing in your life. In fact, that's what he does for this guy. He does something amazing. It brings us to part two of our conversation. Part two is this: Jesus heals him. Jesus heals him. He leans over, and in this conversation with this guy, he says two words. Two words. And these are two powerful words. And I think these are two words that there's a chance that God is speaking to you today as well. Here's what Jesus says. He says, "Get up." Get up. I'm sure this guy, as he hears those words, he's thinking, "Get up? What are you talking about? How am I going to get up? That's crazy. I've been trying to get up for a really long time." Jesus, at this point in the story, he's about 30 years old. He literally could look at Jesus and say, "I have been trying to get up since before you were even born. What do you mean, get up?" But remember, this isn't just some random guy. This is God in the flesh. When Jesus speaks those words, "Get up," he at the same time is holding the rings of Saturn in place. He is powering the sun. He is sustaining the life of an orchid in the field next door. He is power. He is life. He is resurrection. He is creator and sustainer. He sees all. He knows all. And he has all the time in the world to sit next to you when you find yourself by the pool. He speaks these words. He says, "Get up." Don't desensitize yourself to the Bible and what happens here, because you don't use your legs for 38 years. Your muscles shrink. Before everyone's eyes, this guy grows muscles where none had been before, and he stands on legs that had not held his weight for almost four decades. I mean, this guy stands up. Just imagine the perspective shift. This guy for the last 38 years has been looking at everything from down here. Everyone he looks at, he looks up to. What if when this guy stands up, he's taller than someone else in the room? How much of a difference would that be? And not only that, but this guy, he's a brand new schedule, right? He doesn't have to go sit by the pool every single day anymore. Now he can do, I don't know, he could go stroll through the market. He could go out to dinner with some friends. He could get a job. He could go worship in the temple. This guy's whole life has just been changed. His past is gone. The new has come. Everything about him is about to be different because of those two words, "Get up." And I believe that Jesus is in the business now of giving us new life, just like he was in the business then of giving him new life. And if you haven't trusted Jesus, today's the day. Today's the day. Get up. Experience this life that God longs for you. God himself came to our planet. He lived a life that we could never live. He died on a cross in our place, and then he rose from the dead as a promise to us that we could experience everlasting life. Get up. Get up, experience the life, trust in who he is, because he has new life for you. And if today, if it's a decision that you're making, you're turning a corner to trust Jesus for the first time, and all of our spaces right up front, we have people right after the service who would love to hear that, who would love to celebrate with you, who would love to help you maybe take a next step in your spiritual journey and would love to pray for you. And so Jesus tells this guy, "Stand up, get up." And he tells him to roll up his mat. And so the guy bends over, he rolls his mat up, throws it over his shoulder. And he turns back around. Jesus is gone. Like he has faded into the crowd. And so the guy walks out and he leaves the pool. And end of story, right? I mean, meets Jesus, gets healed. walks off into the sunset, lives happily ever after. End of story. And not so fast. Here's how it continues. It says, the day on which this took place was a Sabbath. And the Jewish leader said to the man who had been healed, it's the Sabbath. The law forbids you to carry your mat. Wait, what? So they see this guy who they know can't walk. And he's up, he's walking around. Not only is he walking around, but he's carrying the mat that he had laying out for 38 years. And they're not just like, oh my God, what happened to you? How are you walking? This is amazing. That's not their response. Instead, they're criticizing him for what? Carrying his mat? The guy is just confused. And he just says, well, yeah, I'm carrying my, the guy, he healed, like you can see, I'm walking, he healed my legs. And then he told me to pick up my mat. So I did what he told me to do. And the religious leaders, they aren't having any of that. They're thinking, we can't have some healer going around telling people to break the law. So they tell him, who is it? Who is this guy? Show us to him. Point him out. We need to have a conversation with this guy. And here's what we read. It says, the man who was healed had no idea who it was. The man who was healed had no idea who it was. Don't miss that. Don't miss that. You might be here. You don't own a Bible. You've never even read a Bible. You don't know who God is. If you included today, you could still count on one hand the number of times that you have ever been inside a church. You don't know God. You have no idea who Jesus is. But the good news is that the life that Jesus offers has no prerequisites. There are no disclaimers. He doesn't do a background check or run your credit. There is no drug screen. There's no like spiritual resume that you have to put together. It doesn't matter what you're struggling with or who you're sleeping with or how many times in the past you have rejected Jesus. His grace is free. It's free. His mercy is unending. And I think that there are some of you, you're here in the building today because you just desperately needed to be reminded of that truth. In the New Testament, we read it a little bit further on where it just says it this way in Romans chapter 5. It says, but God demonstrates his own love for us in this. While we were still sinners, that's the moment. When we're still messed up, when we're still broken, that's the moment that Jesus died for us. Christ died for us. So this guy, no idea who Jesus is. He can't point him out and cry. He has no idea who he is. But he does get to meet him again. And that brings us to the third part of our conversation today. Third part is called this, Jesus found him. Jesus found him. Story continues and says, later, Jesus found him at the temple and said to him, see, you're well again. Stop sinning or something worse may happen to you. The man went away and told the Jewish leaders that it was Jesus who had made him well. So Jesus finds him. He's at the Temple Mount. But here's the thing. The Temple Mount's huge. It's not far from the Pool of Bethesda. In fact, it's just across the street. But it's massive. It's this huge area. Something like 35 acres. If that doesn't make sense to you, think about it in football fields. It's like 25 or 26 football fields can all fit on the Temple Mount. I brought a picture with me just to kind of give you. I found this just on Google Maps, and then I highlighted the area where the Temple Mount is. I wanted to like zoom in and get both the Pool of Bethesda and the Temple Mount, but I couldn't get close enough to be able to see it because the Temple Mount is so huge. To this day, they have religious festivals on the Temple Mount, and they regularly see 250,000 people all at once, all on the Temple Mount. how hard would it be for Jesus to find one guy who he met one time in the midst of hundreds of thousands of people? I mean, it seems like it would be pretty hard, but Jesus chases him down. Jesus finds him on the Temple Mount because he has something important. He has something significant that he needs to tell this guy. And what he says is, it's kind of harsh, isn't it? I mean, he comes up to him, he finds him, and he says, you need to stop sinning. Something worse is going to happen to you. I mean, it sounds kind of harsh. I think Jesus is saying, hey, your body has been healed, but your habits are still broken. I think he's saying, you have experienced the very love of God, the grace of God. It has healed your body, and now let that transform you from the inside out. Let that bleed through you and change the way that you're living. I love this story because there are two verses right back to back. One verse, we get this guy who is healed miraculously by a God that he doesn't even know the God's name. He has no idea. He has experienced the full grace and mercy and hope and joy of a God who he doesn't even know. And then in the very next verse, Jesus comes to him and challenges him to change. I think some of us here, we need this. We need to be reminded today that God loves us, he cares about us, he has hopes for our future, that we are a child of God. He has poured out his love over our lives. And some of us are here because we need the challenge. We need to be challenged to change. We need to stop what we're doing because we know it's far from God. We know it's not honoring God. Whatever that thing is that we're a part of or that thing that we're doing, we need to stop. And I love how these two verses come back to back. But why does he do that? I mean, why does Jesus find this guy, and why has Jesus maybe found you here today to tell him that? I mean, why does he care? Why does he challenge him to change? John, in his gospel, he actually tells us the answer. John, at the very end of his gospel, he gives this like summary statement that says, everything that I've written, all these stories that you've read, here's why I put them in there. Here's why I included them. Here's what John says. In chapter 20, he says, Jesus performed many other signs in the presence of his disciples, which are not recorded in this book. But these are written that you may believe that Jesus is the Messiah, the Son of God, and that by believing, here it is, you ready? You may have life. Why are we reading all these stories? Why did John write all these stories? Because he cares that we may have life. And not just everlasting life, but life right now. That we could experience the life that he offers. Jesus came to give us life. My family, we love amusement parks. We love roller coasters. And you know the drill, right? You go to an amusement park, stand in line for hours and hours and hours, and finally you get up to the spot you're going to be next. The people in front of you, they get onto the ride, and then there's this big yellow line in front of you and these gates that go and shut, right? And inevitably, there's always like some kid who's like hanging on the gate or pushing on the gate, and the person has to come over the intercom and say, please step back from the gate. Like, we will not start the ride until you step back from the gate. Why do amusement parks put those lines and gates there? I mean, they do it because they don't want us to have fun, right? No, of course not. Amusement park, the whole point of an amusement park is to have fun. They put that there so that you don't die. Because if you step past that gate, you step over that line at the wrong moment, you could die. And I think Jesus chases this guy down. I think he finds him on the Temple Mount. I have a hunch that maybe he is finding you here today because he wants you to know that he has come to give you life. Stop crossing the line. Stop crossing the line. The other side of the line is where death is. Stop sinning. You will experience relational death if you keep doing that. You're going to experience spiritual death or emotional death. Stop crossing the line because I love you and I care about you and I desperately long for you to experience life everlasting and life right now. And this guy, he responds to Jesus. And I think it's a haunting verse. As I was studying this week, this verse just kept coming back to me. It's at the very end, and it's just this one line where this response from this guy we read says this: the man went away. Jesus challenges him to change, and what does he do? Just says the man went away. If we read further in chapter 5, it says that he goes back to the religious leaders. He tells them who Jesus is, and we know that this is a turning point in the life of Jesus. This is a moment that pushes him closer to the cross. This is a moment where the religious leaders become fueled with anger and rage towards Jesus. And as I just mentioned the cross, next week we're starting a new series. And the new series is going to talk through just the final hours before the cross. I'm really excited about spending a few weeks looking at those moments. So be sure to join us in the next upcoming weeks as we head towards Easter. But that verse, he's walked away. He walked away. I think you and I, we have an opportunity to respond. How will we respond to the hope of Jesus, the love of Jesus that has been poured out onto us? Will we lean in with all of our hurts and all of our habits and all of our struggles? Will we lean in and take steps closer to him, trusting that he really does long to give us life? Or will we turn and walk away? And I just wonder, as we wrap up our time today, I just wonder how you'll respond. How will you respond? Today, for those of us who are followers of Jesus, we have an opportunity to respond by just taking some time and celebrating communion together. And communion is a time where we just get to reflect and look back and kind of sift through our own hearts and our own minds and allow the Spirit of God to identify and point out areas in our lives where we're crossing the line, where we're sinning, where we need to repent, where we need to turn back towards him and trust him with our lives. And we can identify those and bring those to the feet of God. And it also gives us a time to just remember what he has done for us. That his body was broken and his blood was shed because he loves us deeply. So I'd love to invite our worship leaders on all of our campuses and spaces to come back up, and campus pastors as well. They're going to help us lead through communion together. And while they get situated, I'm just going to pray for us. So will you join me in prayer? God, today we are just so captivated by your goodness and your grace and your mercy in our lives. And we know that you long for us to experience life, not just life everlasting, but life right now, today. You long for us to cling onto your hope and joy and life so that we can move forward trusting you in new and creative ways. And I pray that you would give us the courage to do that. You give us the ears to hear and see where you long for us to move. And you would help us take those first steps. And we pray this in the name of your son, Jesus. Amen.